What's clearly happened in the last 5 years under the veil of COVID is consumers have realized they have to get into the driver's seat on their health. And devices like Oura are giving us more and more information where we can be into the driver's seat.
A few years ago, when I came for the first time in the Bay, I've noticed that every single investor was wearing an Oura ring.
You know, our word of mouth is exceptional. The top introduction, when we ask people, how were you introduced to Oura? The top thing that they mention is, I heard it from a family member, a friend. Oura is a translator for your body. What Oura does is it gives your body a voice. That Oura takes all these complex signals from your body and it simplifies them and gives you, through these very simple scores and data sets, a sense of how you're doing.
Great, Doc. It's a pleasure to have you on this podcast. I've been waiting for a lot of time. I'm a very big fan of Oura and also the previous companies that you have been part of. I've been also reading quite a few times the book from Nest.
From Tony Bilbo.
Been great. So I'm pretty excited to have this discussion.
I'm excited to talk to you today. For sure.
Great. So what if we start with a bit of a historical view of what have you done in the past before you joined Oura?
For sure. So I guess some of the things that just make me tick, what gets me excited, it starts for me working on mission-based companies, companies that have a positive impact on the world. I mean, that's what really gets me excited and gets me really fired up day to day. I mean, I spent about 15 years on the agency side of the business. So working in creative agencies, brands like Adidas and EV1, the first electric vehicle. And I pivoted into a client side role at Levi's. That was my first client side role. It was very much akin to what Adidas was trying to do at the time, which was reinvent the brand, this great historical brand within denim and sportswear, to a younger audience. There was a lot of similarities in the strategies at that time. And really I ran marketing communications for Levi's for roughly 4 or 5 years. Brand men's and women's globally for the company. I really had, you know, living in being in the Bay Area, which I know you are now too. I really wanted to go work for a technology company. I was like, I'm sitting in the sort of center of technology, and I really wanted to get that experience. And I had the good fortune to meet Tony Fadell back in 2012 when Nest was an early stage startup. It had just launched the Nest Learning Thermostat. Tony, the creator of the iPod, and then first number of generations of the iPhone. And the company's mission was very focused on sustainability. It was this idea that these heating and cooling systems and thermostats have technology rooted in the 1980s. Can't program them. 50% of our heating and cooling comes through this device. And it was really about reinventing and bringing this sort of smart home technology to these really outdated and unloved products called thermostats. And bringing a consumer lens to them, which I just was incredibly excited about. So I jumped on board when it was 40 or 50 people roughly. And over the course of 6 years, we really expanded the Internet of Things, the category of connected home across smoke alarms, across cameras and security. And again, the overarching strategy was about energy consumption within the home. So the constant thread through all those products was they were all these unsexy, unloved products within the home that we were really consumerizing. I mean, that was really the mission and vision. I really enjoyed it and really focused on bringing Apple-like consumer, a level of consumer problem-solving experiences to the connected home. After about 6 years, I made a pivot. Healthcare was another area that I thought was not, you know, it in many ways, especially for Americans, but even around the world, it's a disappointing experience. It's not, you're typically waiting in a waiting room for a doctor for 15 or 20 minutes on average in the U.S. It's usually a month or two to get an appointment. If you need specialty care, it's 2 or 3 months to get specialty care. And One Medical was a brand that I had used and loved and thought I could make a real impact in the company as it was trying to scale, starting with the positioning and the overarching strategy within One Medical. It was really a brand similarly, but on the service side, right? Very different from Nest, focused on a service experience that could bring a 2.0 level healthcare experience to Americans domestically. It was part of the company through that the IPO and then the acquisition through Amazon, and got connected with the team at Aura, pivoting to Aura. Healthcare wellness has always been a core part of my life. It's what I get excited about. I love being active in my daily life, and I had the product, loved it. And thought it, for me, it connected a lot of passions in my life. It was a hardware brand, but also had a software experience. It's again solving a real consumer problem. It's a disruptor in the wearable space. And when I look at these experiences, for me, it's where can I bring my experience to bear and really help this company as it's scaling and bringing this great experience to more and more people around the world.
What I wanted to ask you is, those are very significant companies that you worked at that had a very big impact around the world.
Yeah.
And the first question that comes to mind is, how did you choose? What are your criteria? Because you joined very early, most of these companies. What are your criteria in choosing such companies?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, I think I have to have passion and be a fan of the brand and their products. I mean, in the case of Levi's, I wore Levi's, I still do today. That was my brand of choice. Or Adidas. I was an Adidas kid, not a Nike kid. The idea of home design and bringing an impact and experience into people's homes and taking care of the people inside the home and then being focused on the world around it, this sort of environment, those are passion points for me. They were really, these are things that just get me really excited. And I feel like that for me is a precursor to, if I can get excited about it and help tell that story to more and more people around the world, it can help that company grow at its most basic form. I do a lot of due diligence on that. I mean, there's the decision making, which I think is some of what you're asking about, is really understanding where the company is and its journey is really important to me. Nest was an earlier stage company. It was early stage. I had confidence in Tony and the leadership team that he had brought on board. Like he was a proven leader. You just look at what he did under Steve at Apple was profound. In the case of One Medical and Aura, I mean, I spent a lot of time with the leadership, the board, the investors before I made a decision about wanting to join the company and really understanding the trajectory and again, where the company could go. So used within Aura as an example, we had historically been a direct-to-consumer business. I mean, we have a commercial business that is a great and aggressively growing business, but we were primarily on the consumer side, a direct-to-consumer business. I saw a huge opportunity to grow the brand globally within both direct-to-consumer membership and within our retail business, as an example.
Hmm. Before I start asking questions about what I wanted to also see, what are the real differences in terms of marketing and in terms of your role between the different stages of these companies?
It's a great question. I think one big piece is the audience and the segmentation, the sort of archetype that you're talking to definitely changes. So I can use Aura or Nest, either example is kind of similar in that in the earlier stages, Aura a couple of years ago was more of a biohacker, a little bit more male skewed consumer. Aura is now is scaling and becoming a more mass brand, right? It's being you see it worn by more and more people around the world, both men and women. Our women's business through our through the incredible women's health apps that we've connected in through Flow, Glow, Clue, Natural Cycles has really, really grown. We're now available, on Amazon and at Best Buy and global retailers as well. That consumer, if you think about the sort of adoption curve, is changing. We're moving to so that the media mix and our go-to-market very much has to change alongside of that. So we start to think about different targeted media in streaming, even we're using a bunch of digital out of home, but you think about even the profile within performance media, within Meta and within Google, the targeting and the profiling of those messages changes. The messaging changes too, as you move to a more mass audience. So it's really, we're really very much thinking through the life cycle and really painting a picture of those segmentations and who those audiences are. That's one of the most clear differences as you start to scale.
You joined Aura almost a couple of years ago. What is the first thing that you do as a leader of a company that is joining now?
Yeah. I think first it's look, listen, and learn. I think there is a really important phase in the first 30, 60, even 90 days where I really spend a lot of time meeting with the team on our team, the marketing team, but also broadly within the company, right? I mean, I think you can make some sort of short shrift decisions on how you think things are going in areas. And really, I think that's really key. Look, listen, learn is step one. One of the first projects I took on, and it was through those conversations, I asked, who do you think Aura is, or where do you think we're going? And I got a lot of different answers. I mean, the employees are incredibly passionate about our mission and what we do every day to bring healthcare and wellness to people around the world. But when you really tried to get a pinpoint on exactly what we're doing and why, it was not entirely clear. So one of the first things I did is kicked off a positioning and strategy conversation about where Aura is going. And we conducted about 20 interviews across the company, both in Finland and the US, to really dive into the heart and soul of what Aura, what it is, and what place it has in the world. We did look at qualitative research, quantitative research, and the output of that project and that experience was, we kept coming back to this idea that what Aura does is it gives your body a voice. That Aura takes all these complex signals from your body, respiratory, heart rate, and it simplifies them and gives you through these four very simple scores and data sets a sense of how you're doing. We're essentially, Aura is a translator for your body, which is very much think of Aura as like it's the sixth sense of communicating what's going on in your body. And that's really, that at its heart was the output. That was one of the first things we did, is let's get really clear. It's important for marketing, of course, but it's also critical for the product teams, like in terms of where are we focusing our energy in hardware and software as we look into the future.
And why would you say that people actually have different opinions about the message of Aura at the beginning?
I think one, people are, in any company, you get employees who've been there 6 months or 7 or 8 years. Aura has been in the market for 10 years. We are a pioneer in the space. We help create this idea of a wearable that sits on your finger. Born in Finland, born in the Nordics. I think as you talk to employees from different stages, they could have different opinions about what this, because these things change over time as the product evolves and becomes more rich. I think that's one thing. I think the second is you just need an organizing idea that is simple and clear and is authentic and true to who the brand is. And really, it's then taking that idea, which should come from the employees and some of the research as well. What do consumers say? And then it's getting articulated across the company. So, we've made a real effort to make sure that during our onboarding with employees, that consistently they all understand our reason for being, that when you walk into our office in San Francisco or Oulu, you see it and feel it. I mean, it's on the walls. We're communicating to employees on a pretty regular basis why we get up every morning and what we do at Aura. That's really critical.
I've seen the recent Best Buy partnership was a couple of years ago, I believe, but yeah. I've seen yeah. recently about Amazon and the move there. I wanted yes. to ask you first, when it comes to that partnership, how do you ensure from a marketing perspective that the partners that you have convey the same message and the same story?
Yeah, we had met, the Best Buy partnership was about actually only roughly a year ago, a year plus ago we launched. We had been meeting with multiple retailers. Best Buy leadership was just, they were big fans of Aura. I mean, they loved the product. The CEO, Corey, Frank Beto, the SVP of merchandising, these folks were big fans of Aura. They all wore the product. They loved it. And they wanted it in, they really thought that the Best Buy consumer would appreciate it. So I think that was the first step for us, is like, do we have like minds on this in terms of what we're trying to do? Best Buy really got behind it, and the retailers for us are an education and awareness tool as much as they are a sales tool. I mean, it's really about Best Buy has almost 1,000 doors across the U.S. It's a huge retailer. When you think about electronic products and sort of like first to market, Best Buy is absolutely one of the top players in that space. But we could create within the Best Buy experience in their brick and mortar, for example, a full shop and shop Aura experience. We need to educate people on why a wearable on your finger makes a lot of sense. The accuracy, the science, our legacy, our 10 years of pioneering, wearables in the space, sleep, activity, women's health. What the app experience like, and also sizing. Sizing is a really unique part of our experience. So we typically, within our digital DTC experience, we send you a sizing kit, you get sized. We could actually size people right in the store in Best Buy. So that's what we did. We created this large shop and shop adjacent to Apple. And then we had, across their 900 doors, smaller sections that also, educated people. That messaging, I would say, you asked the question about, well, how did you work on the messaging? We have core messaging within our brand that we understand that helps people educate them before they purchase on what the product experience is like, and we did have to adjust it, and we had a lab that we created with Best Buy where we actually tested out a variety of different messaging. Both at an awareness level to down in the funnel that was more educational. About what the experience is like. I mean, there were digital touchscreens and things, full video, really, really trying to do as much storytelling as we could on what the experience is like. But it's very much an iterative process. Like we did the research in the lab, talked to consumers, got their feedback, did shop and shop experiences and journaling with them. And then we went to market. Amazon is very much, an extension of that learning, right? I mean, what we learned within Best Buy, we could apply as we grow our sort of global retail footprint for the brand.
Super. I wanted to also ask you, there was this Gucci partnership a while ago. Also, I've seen something, you spoke about Equinox,
yeah.
As well. I wanted to understand, like, there is that some sort of association brand to brand, but why do you think that these things work from a marketing perspective?
Yeah, great question. I think Gucci allowed us to do a couple of things. I think one, it gives us fashion cred, credibility in the space. I think that's one. If you thought wearables, may or may not be right for you, Gucci sort of created a whole different story for Aura, especially within men and women who love fashion. I mean, it's a device that tells you all these amazing things about your body and what's going on, but it's also a piece of jewelry. I mean, it sits on your finger, right? Even more so than a watch wearable, it is jewelry. So you see, I mean, we've introduced on our own things like brushed titanium or rose gold or these other colors statements, which speak to everybody's personality. But Gucci was another reason to believe within the brand that spoke to a whole new audience. I mean, we were sold in 100+ Gucci stores around the world. Gucci was sort of our distribution partner, if you will. But it opened us up to a whole new audience, and we got a lot of amazing feedback on this. Similarly with Equinox. Equinox is very similar. Like it's a like-minded audience, but it also is a different audience. It's introducing Aura to a new subset. Within Equinox, we created protective ring covers that when you're an Equinox member and you're in their weightlifting, we wanted to offer something that was really applicable and appropriate for their consumer target. And one of the things we heard from Equinox members and from within our own was, when I'm out and I'm working out or doing anything, I would like to have something that actually protects the ring. So we created this special rest and recovery kit for Equinox members that had that had those covers and was appropriate for that audience. So it allows us to get some energy and heat within a new consumer segment. But again, we're trying to create something that's very special and appropriate for that audience. And in each of those cases, they were very much doing that. What does the Gucci consumer want? What does Aura bring to the table? And then the same with Equinox. What does the Equinox member want? And then how can Aura fit in? It's very much figuring out that right and appropriate blend for those.
For companies that are considering doing that, how can you find the right partner? Or maybe how can you find, is it based on the audience or the type of customer of the other brand? Or yeah. What do you reason about it?
So, I mean, there is, I'd say there's an art and science to this. Like there are brands that family really well together. In the Equinox example, our audiences are fall right in line. I mean, we're very consistent in the way we, so I think the thing one is just like, do you see these two brands familying together? Does it make sense? Does it feel like there's, 1+1=3, right? That you're really getting something really special there. I mean, we did spend a lot of time looking at their audience and their member data. Like because there is a give it back and forth, right? You want to be, as you're having conversations about partnerships, what is the value that we can bring to the Equinox member and then the Aura member or a new member? So you're thinking about that. Geographically, demographically, what do they look like? Psychographically, what do they really look like? Those members. In the case of Equinox, they're very urban, heavily New York weighted and Los Angeles coastal brand. And they have an exceptional product. Like they're a premium, high quality product that very much fit in with the level of quality that we demand of ourselves at Aura too. So there was very much a meeting of the minds. And then you're going through the process of, back to my Best Buy conversation, are the leadership team's needs aligned, right? In terms of what we want to do. What do they want to do? What is important to Equinox leadership? What is important to Aura? So I do think, that these things, they take time. They're not, it can be years in development, just given the amount of product development work or strategy work on the customer side. That's really important.
I wanted to ask you about membership and what are the learnings there since you launched the membership?
We are all about adding value to this membership and continually evolving and making the product better and better. And you see that with an order. I mean, you see, you know, we launched the resilience feature. We launched daytime stress last year. Resilience was in January. We launched pregnancy insights. You know, we're launching next week. We're launching Aura Labs, which is a sort of a beta program, if you will. We have a product in there called Symptom Radar that is exceptional. I mean, I've used it myself personally multiple times. It gives you a heads up if your body temperature is rising, that you could be coming down with something. I had a COVID and a flu vaccine, and it gave me a heads up. You know, your body temperature rose last night, you may want to go into rest mode. So what the membership one allows us to do is it allows us to create an incredibly rich software experience that just continues to get better and better and better over time. And I think over the last year, we continue every month, every 6 to 8 weeks, we're producing new software updates within the experience. So Aura Labs is next week. And then beyond that, when you start to look into May, June, and July and the rest of the year, we have a whole other really exciting roadmap on the software side. I think that's thing one. Thing two, it's a community. Like Aura, I mean, the membership is, we have an incredibly rabid fan base. I mean, they love the product, and the membership is as much about that as anything. I mean, it's a community of like-minded people who are helping each other along this health journey, which I think is really, really, really key.
You know what I'm wondering? A few years ago when I came for the first time in the Bay, I've noticed that every single investor around the area was wearing an Aura ring, and then a lot of the founders too. And I'm wondering what's going on there.
Well, one, they're smart people. Let's just say that they have good taste of product. So I think, you know, when you think about venture firms or Silicon Valley or the Bay Area, you have the birthplace of lots and lots of technology. I mean, a lot of technology in the U.S. and around the world, it is born here in San Francisco, the Bay Area, and it travels, you know, east and around the world. So I think back to that, the conversation about segmentation, I think the earliest Aura users were athletes and celebrities and icons and business leaders and people who were really on top of what's new and exciting, what's happening in the world of technology or healthcare, and they were trying out the product. I think the other thing is that we talked about the community and membership. The our word of mouth is exceptional. People, I mean, you know, the top introduction when we ask people, how were you introduced to Aura? By and away, the top thing that they mention is, I heard it from a family member, a friend told me. So what happens is that CEO, venture leader, business leader, icon, et cetera, they're on their own buying the product, and then they're telling friends and so on. So within their own community. So I think that's what has been happening. And back to the point about segmentation, it's kind of where we started, and that's the genesis of, like, people were really proactive about health and leaders and people like that. And then it's now growing outside of those. But I think that's why you're seeing it is the word of mouth data that we have says that the folks love the product and what it does and the benefits, and they tell their friends, what is that on your hand? Is that an Aura ring? Oh, have I talked to you about have you seen my sleep scores? My readiness score today is, I mean, it's a really powerful tool that they want to spread to their friends.
Same. I learned about Aura through word of mouth. And what I'm wondering is from your perspective, what do you do to enhance this? Like, you know that a lot of people speak about Aura, but then if you want to really increase the amount of people that speak about it, what do you do?
Yeah. So, I mean, there's some tactical things we do. Like, I'll give you one example. Like, we have a refer a friend program where we curate products. We designed a sleep mask with a partner. We had a yoga mat we developed with Aloe, blue black glasses for sleeping. We curated a group of products, and you know, over a period of time, we ask folks within the app, do you if you refer a friend, we gift these products to people. So it's back to the community piece that we know. Our members are sharing the information with friends and family, and we should be giving them something as a brand, as a thank you. They're Aura fans. So that's probably the most potent example. The others is member storytelling. Like, we do a lot of storytelling in life cycle, in the digital space, blogs, video content, it is really an area that we focus a lot of energy on. There's stories within all age ranges, and then within all these different use cases, women's health, heart health, sleep. We talked about resilience within stress, and like being able to tell those member stories and people resonate with them is really a way for us to sort of fuel the conversation. I mean, we want to enable them and give them the tools that they can share with friends in a really powerful way. People also just share their sleep scores, you know, on their own in their digital feed with their partner, spouse. They do it frequently. So it's really enabling that to, in terms of the community at large.
Speaking of content, before I call our call, I spoke with Melanie Strong, who is one of the early investors of Aura. Mm. And she told me that there was an interesting story about the move towards women's health. Mm. And I've seen that I think the pioneer of this was Aura, that started speaking about women's health, started speaking about the research and getting articles out. What was the inception of that idea, and how did it actually work?
We actually have for Women's Health Month, we have a campaign that's going to be starting to tell the story of that on the Aura women who really went off and created this product 2 or 3 years ago. It's really focused on that it was a by women for women team that was focused on women's health and what women need. Our first partner there, which has been a really deep partnership, is Natural Cycles. And when women are, looking at their cycle, wanting to have children or not have children, they, typically within the Natural Cycles experience, you would have to put a thermometer in your mouth at 8 a.m. every day to track your it's cumbersome. It's, if you forget, it's a bummer. It's not a great experience for women. We know, given the incredible accuracy on our product, right? It sits on your finger. You've got two arteries right underneath your finger for heart and respiratory. It's getting a really clean signal. You're wearing it at night. You know, our battery life is 5 to 7 days, really easy, lightweight. You don't even know when you have it on at night. We fed into the Natural Cycles app temperature readings for women. So they could see exactly when their cycle was happening. And it helps them on planning for their own life and understanding what's going on in their body. So it's the best use case on how to use that. So that was the genesis of it, really, for us was that partnership. And then we've grown, you know, Natural Cycles being the first, but we've grown to Flow, which is based out of London, very large women's health app, Glow and Clue. So within women's health, we've created a reputation of really solving problems for women in healthcare, and we get a tremendous amount of love from women for this, and allowing them to have the data and control over what's going on in their bodies.
Something else I wanted to ask you is, when you consider marketing and you are location based and so on, you can be very tactical and very focused on a specific type of customer. But then when you consider a global market, I'm guessing each culture has its own differences. Mm. How can you approach and how can you say the story in these different countries, for example?
Yeah, it's We talked about our global footprint. I mean, we Aura has a global footprint, but it has not, it hasn't, we haven't done that much marketing really around the world, I would say generally. We are sold. We have multiple languages in the app and online, and we're sold in local currencies on our direct-to-consumer channel. The brand also sits at different stages of education around the world. So in the U.S., you know, we may have higher awareness than we do in Germany or, you know, pick a market, South Korea, for example. We, as we grow and as we expand in these new areas, understanding the nuances in those consumer audiences and where the brand sits is going to be really, really, really key. In many cases, it's introducing the brand. You're sort of starting at an earlier chapter, whereas in the U.S. maybe further along in the journey in terms of education. The need state may be different. There's also different, the way wellness and healthcare is shows up in that marketplace may be very different. Like the U.S. healthcare system and how supportive or not they are with consumers may be different than in the UK, Germany, Japan, et cetera. So I think, you know, as the brand continues to grow, deeply understanding the consumer mindsets within those markets is going to be a key part of our go-to-market strategy. Absolutely. Because I think you're exactly right. And the same go-to-market in the US, it may not necessarily work in another country. It's got to be nuanced and tailored to the marketplace.
Mm-hmm. I believe roughly 6 months ago, there was an increase in the amount of integrations, an increase in the amount of companies working with, and an increase in terms of getting more developers to use the API of Aura. How are you thinking about that? Why the expansion in that area?
I mean, I think our latest data is 600, maybe more than that. One, that those partners and who we partner with, I think it starts with consumers and what they want and what they tell us they want. Strava is a good example of that. We had, you know, big requests for Strava in making that experience as great as it can be, or Apple Health, and like how do you integrate there? So I think thing one is it has to come from consumers. There's like sort of open API and easy integrations. And then there's the deeper integrations, like, you know, Natural Cycles is probably the best example there, where you're creating a specific bespoke experience that's tailored to that ecosystem and that consumer need. But we are, you know, as the brand is growing, our integrations are a key part of our go-to-market. It's all about, you talked about membership and adding value. It's all about adding value. Like do we see what do consumers want? Where do they want us integrated? Where do they want their Aura in, you know, data and information to show up, or how is it going to impact that other app or experience that they're using? But it's really a member-led conversation. And it's about adding value. I mean, ultimately, that's what we're trying to do.
I wanted to also ask you about competition. I think Aura had a fantastic run over the years, and obviously that would draw a number of competitors. We've seen a number of announcements from big companies getting into this space. How do you approach this situation when it becomes more competitive? Is this more of a, let's say our story better and let's resonate with people more? Or is it a heads-on approach? How are you thinking about this?
Yeah, I mean, I think this space has gotten a lot of interest, right? I mean, in the last year, 6 months to a year, we view it as validation for what we're doing. I mean, Samsung coming into the category is validation. This is an idea that Aura pioneered a decade ago, created, you know, I mean, really, really pioneered. And it's a unique, we have a unique product. I mean, 10 years gives us an incredible set of experiences to make the product as exceptional as it can be. I would say at the highest level, we're not looking over our shoulder. I mean, honestly, we're not. It's not something we talk about much. We're very focused on where are we going? How do we make the experience as good as it can be? What other experiences within the product can we improve people's health within? We're really focused on privacy and security within the product and making sure it's best it can be. It's, you know, the birth of our product, where it's made, where it's created, is a unique differentiator. It is a product that was born in Finland, the happiest place in the world, apparently, in the Nordics. And it's people who care very much about balance in their life. That's where it started. That genesis and DNA of the product very much flows through everything that you see within the experience. The level of quality, precision, accuracy, the science that we are constantly working on to make sure it's as precise as it can be, is I think unparalleled. So again, we're maniacally focused on making it the most exceptional product experience that we can. I mean, that's really what we're focused on our energy on.
The last few questions I wanted to ask you is about team building and leadership.
Yeah.
When you consider company culture, for example, I'm guessing you've been hiring a lot of folks. How are you thinking about company culture? And when do you apply for company culture? Is it day one? Is it later stage? And how are you thinking about this?
Yeah, it's so important at these stages, you know, or as a very high growth company that's scaling and we're bringing the product to more and more people around the world. The Oranians, as we call them at the company, they are there because they love the mission. They love what we're doing every day. We get, you know, that word of mouth and that feedback from consumers is incredibly powerful about how we're making change and differences in people's lives. So thing one, people are here because they love it. They just love what we're working on. This is not a superfluous product. This is a product making a positive impact on the world. That is, if you ask any Iranian, that's what they'll tell you. It's surrounding yourself with people equally passionate and want to drive that forward. That's really important. I'm a big believer in bringing together people with different experiences is a powerful way that have had, you know, a variety of different experiences. It's not all, you know, hardware folks from a certain mindset. I think people can bring those to bear. I also think a combination of the legacy talent who's been here for a while and to know the stories of why we were doing what we're doing with some new talent is important. Bringing in people from our own networks is important too, where you've been in the, you know, trenches together, working through challenging problems. And I think that's also helpful. So I think it's a good mix of, it's important to have a mix of legacy talent, newer, and then folks that you've worked with before and you know are proven and tested and know how to do it, I think is really important. But I think it's the collection of all those. It starts and ends with the product experience and the mission. I mean, that's ultimately why we bring people in, and people who do exceptionally well here at Aura is because of that.
Considering the mission and the people interested, I'm sure that through a lot of applications, it's difficult to tell. So if we go all the way deep here and you are into an interview process and you are interviewing a candidate, how can you really tell that they really love the product and they're really in it for the mission?
Yeah, that interviewing process is a tricky one, because you're right. You're meeting that person in a moment in time. We do our panels. We have a, you know, small group of panels from across the company that are meeting with people to really pressure test that. I mean, I think there is the science and the art again on this, that you can feel that and feel comfortable. You know, we all have large networks too. So it's like, you know, in the age of sort of LinkedIn, you can really quickly understand a lot about somebody. I think their experiences tell stories too. Like, you know what? I mean, I think you can look at somebody's experiences over their career and really understand what makes them tick. What did they learn? We're all very much products of our, these different experiences over time. And you know, if, as an outsider looking in at those brands or those experiences, what do you think comes to mind? So you can, I think you can really paint a picture of what people learned along the journey, depending on who the employer was. I think you can at a high level, and then you got to go deeper, right? Then you got to really get into it. It's meeting them where they are. It's talking through and deeply understanding their passion for the space.
And then in terms of leadership, when you have so many people in the team and you have to be making decisions, how do you convey these decisions? And maybe how would you describe yourself as a leader? What can people understand from you and learn from you in this?
Yeah, I'm told I have a lot of energy. It can be good and bad. You know, I think in these roles, you've got to, you know, communication is clearly key. You got to be able to communicate to a CEO or a company, the strategy, a board, you know, those leaders and have them feel comfortable in your approach. That has to be rigorous and all those things. I also think it's working with the team day in and day out. I think these leadership roles in especially in a company of our size, you know, we're in working it with the team day in and day out, like on initiatives, on product launches, on whatever the situation is. So like, I think you're having to do both, right? It's high level. What are we doing and why? Really clear on the KPIs, whatever you want to call them, OKRs, KPIs. Like here's what success looks like. And then it's doing the day-to-day work. You know, team building is a big part. I mean, it's, you know, in the US, we're mostly virtual. You know, we have an office in San Francisco, we have offices in New York, et cetera, but San Diego, excuse me, we do in person. Like we do in person. We try to meet with the team on a good cadence where we're doing team building and we're talking in person about what our goals are and engaging as a team. I think that's really important. We spend a good amount of time in Finland. I mean, I was there a couple of weeks ago. I'm going to be there in May. We're a global company with offices. So I think the showing up and engaging in person in addition to virtual is also really, really important as a leader. It's something I really, I prioritize myself.
I ask all of the guests, if we go 100 years into the future and we look backwards, what things in the space are we going to be considering as wrong? So maybe in the wearable space, what would you say that is definitely going to change in the future? And maybe in the healthcare space, what's really wrong today?
You said what's wrong today? Mm-hmm. I mean, I think 100 years in the future, I think what's clearly happened in the last 5 years under the veil of COVID is consumers have realized they have to get into the driver's seat on their health. I mean, if we learned anything in that window, I mean, there's two profound things that happened in COVID. One, work changed fundamentally, which, I mean, there's like no going back, right? That's just a big fundamental change about virtual versus we were always in person all the time. That was a big ways of working. That was, you know, in terms of work around the world over the centuries, is huge. And I think on the healthcare side, and this is where Aura can play a really key role, is that we are now want to be more in control of our health than ever. That there is not, yes, we all may have a primary care doctor or an other care around us to support us in our health journey, but ultimately we have to drive it ourselves. And devices like Aura are giving us more and more information where we can be into the driver's seat. I think that's going to continue to happen over the next 20, 30, 40, 50 years as these wearables become more insightful and intelligent about what's happening in our body. And we're going to have to rely, you know, less and less on, you know, the care, because we're going to have all the information, or that doctor provider or that professional is going to be more informed about what's going on the ride because we're going to have the information ourselves. I think that's the thing that's really powerful and profound.
Doug, that's been a super insightful discussion. Thank you.
It's really great talking to you.